Did I start now? Now. Hey, welcome to the Canon Cantina, a Star Wars show where we try to answer the question, who is Luke Skywalker, just before the release of Star Wars Episode 9? Hey, everybody. I'm Mike. How you doing? Thanks for hopping in on the live stream with us today or downloading us to your podcast app today.
Yeah.
I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and Star Wars best friend, Jesse. What's up, dude?
Oh, man, not a lot.
Yeah. So today is the day where we finally descend into the part of Legends that makes it famous for being exceedingly crappy.
That's right.
We hit that second act of Legends books where none of them are really any good. Today just we are filler. Of course talking about we're talking about Children of the Jedi, a 1995 book published by Barbara Hambly. I tried to make her name into published. this is the first part of an unofficial trilogy, followed by Darksaber and Planet of Twilight. I believe she also did the last one, Planet of Twilight, right?
I think she did.
It will hit in a couple weeks.
But what's exciting is the second one's done by Kevin J. Anderson, so he's around a little bit more.
And he's exceedingly mediocre himself, so if that's the high point, you know what kind of era we're getting into for Legends. We had some fun in Act One, some high points with the Thrawn trilogy, even Dark Empire, and the Jedi Academy trilogy. But now we get into these books are popular now. Let's try something new, and it doesn't always work out for the best. So I don't know how long we'll manage to talk about this one today, but there are a few interesting things that happened to our buddy Luke in this book. Jesse, why don't you go ahead and tell people what we kind of frame our discussion around?
That's right. So if you guys are new to the show, and even if you're not new, we ask these Luke-centric questions at the start of every story arc. And the first question is, what state is our hero Luke as he begins his journey? How do the events and characters he encounters impact his development as the hero we know to be Luke Skywalker? And would Luke's experiences in this story make him different from the Luke we eventually meet in The Last Jedi? And that's our Legends question.
Yeah. And I don't know if we'll address that question more today than we have in some of these other books there, but there are a few strong things that tie into that third one today. You ready to jump into it?
I'm ready.
All right. Roll that beautiful Luke sound effect.
Roll that beautiful Luke sound effect. Let me make sure I got it, you know.
Do you have that beautiful bean footage?
Let's go.
Ever since Luke disappeared, people have been looking for him.
We've passed on all we know.
A lot of rumors, stories.
And I became a legend.
People that knew him best.
Luke.
Young Skywalker.
Luke.
It's all true.
I am a Jedi. Like my father before me.
All of it.
1,000 generations live in you now.
Okay. So we're in the story now, Mike. It's real. I'm facing my demons here. So this book is it's a little much. We also just mentioned, as Mike said, this is kind of what I've dubbed the second act of Legends, and arguably the worst act. I don't think anyone's going to fight that anywhere. Most people prefer the first and third act. And this second act of Legends is a lot of middling. I'm going to say that. And it's a lot of just inconsequential stuff, because it's kind of like, oh, Luke, Leia, and Han going on an adventure and finding some weird planet or a super weapon or something like that. Well, both of those things happen in this book. So the book basically starts off.
It's true.
But nothing significant with the Empire or future villains, so, like the new Jedi Order, or any sort of, you know, actual interesting character development or distress within the Jedi Academy, like happened in the Jedi Academy trilogy. None of that. Actually, none of those characters from the Jedi Academy trilogy even make an appearance in this. They're mentioned by names at times, but it's pretty frustrating after we just spent all that time learning all these characters. You know, like Silgal, for instance, character that I really liked a lot, the Mount Calamari healer. She's not in this, because a lot of these books were kind of written, it seems, Mike, I'm not sure the year this was written, but fairly simultaneous.
I mean, it came out in 95, which was, I think, just on the heels of the Jedi Academy.
It seems like trilogy. A lot of these were being written simultaneous, and it seems like Thrawn and the Jedi Academy trilogy were the only things that actually kind of cared about staying consistent. Because there's even some discrepancies in the plot here. Like, there's some dates that don't add up. And Barbara Hambly, I don't think, was quite the fan that Zahn or someone was. But, that's fine. So this book starts off with our heroes on Ithor, basically. And Ithor, it's cool, it's brought up here because it's going to come up again in the future. Ithor is the homeworld of the Ithorians. That's the hammerhead guy in the Star Wars cantina. And we obviously have an affinity for the cantina. But Mike and I, if you remember, we discussed our favorite Star Wars aliens quite some time ago as a bonus episode. And we both mentioned the Ithorian hammerhead as one of our favorites. And being very upset there was no representation of them in the sequel trilogy. But guess what? It's looking like they're going to be represented at, Black Spire Outpost, because I've already seen
novel stuff. What's the guy's name? There's going to be like an animatronic in one of the stores.
I can't handle it. I love it. They're easily one of my favorite alien races, and we're kind of told in the story that they're kind of a peaceful hippie type culture. They're kind of druids. They're one with nature, that sort of thing. And it's pretty cool. And Han and Leia and Luke are there on this kind of diplomatic mission. That's how we start off.
Oh, man. We'll see if I take the time to do this and figure out how to do this. But maybe I'll do a binaural Ithorian audio experience, because, they have one mouth on each side of their head.
That's true.
And you can hear it coming out of the left side and the right side and the left side and the right side.
You going to do that in your campaign or something?
I actually already did, because my crew went to a bar called the Chattering Ithorian, and I was like, we're just going to say it's filled with Ithorians that talking out of both of their mouths. So it's just kind of a low rumble to all of the humans that were there. It was funny.
That is funny. That's pretty good. Gotta love some Ithorians, that's just the way you got to go. So that's how we start. Do you know where we go from there, Mike? I was going to ask you, this is not really a trick question or a bad quiz or anything.
Well, okay. So, Han and Leia are on Ithor for this festival or whatever. Uh-huh. And Han runs into one of his old smuggling buddies. That's the easiest plot device to introduce a new character into Star Wars. Drub McCum, who's just kind of a crazy old spacer, who essentially is like, "Hey, I'm warning you about the eye of Palpatine."
Palpatine's eye. Like,
okay. Shoot. Oh, well done. That's a callback.
Yeah, calling back with our own show. That's,
yeah.
It's good. We've gotten that far now.
So that's like sort of how the eye of Palpatine is introduced. So it's not even directly to Luke. Luke ends up aboard the eye of Palpatine. Mm-hmm. Based on like a separate force calling or whatever, that he decides to take two brand new students with him.
Brand new.
When Luke takes brand new students with him on a mission, it's like he's putting a red shirt on them in Star Trek.
Good analogy.
You know they're not going to come home.
Yeah, they never do. Yeah, and it's clear too that they are filler, because it's like, This is not a Cornhorn or Kip Duran or a Silgal or, a Tyone or someone like that that's going with Luke. These are characters that are like, hey, you didn't know these characters? Oh, they went to Luke's Jedi Academy too, after the events of the Jedi Academy trilogy.
Here's a little backstory about him. So the two that went with him are Cray Mingla, a female scientist Jedi, which I guess is kind of cool.
This is cool.
But she did use Sirook technology to trap the essence of her boyfriend, Nikos Mar, inside a droid, which that's not so cool. We're just supposed to be like, oh, no, it's fine. He had a fatal disease or whatever. So she's like, well, I'm just going to take your soul and put you in this robot.
See, I like the beginning of this, Mike, because it does prime you for failure. I'm going to say that, because it's like, hey, remember the Sirook and the weird sci-fi, not very Star Wars fantasy stuff in that? Well, I'm going to dig deep into that in this story. And the author does. She really likes sci-fi elements. And this gets bizarre sci-fi. Not even realistic sci-fi. We'll get to it later. But I mean, that's a great example. We have a character whose life essence is trapped in a droid. Just doesn't seem like it fits Star Wars. we've talked about that. I talked about that. Although, with the Sirook thing. I said it a lot.
Yeah. You're right. The soul trapped in a droid doesn't fit so much. But Luke and a brand new young female student does sort of fit legends, as we've been discovering. And he takes them to this nebula where they're like just basically investigating a force calling.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The children are trapped in the well. That's the calling.
The force was Lassie and it said, come save the kids.
So you're thinking Lassie. I'm thinking something dark. I'm thinking Ringu or something. It's some Japanese grudge girl down at the bottom of the well is going to get them when they get there and find out they've actually been dead the whole time. That's what draws them to this planet. Because,
spoiler, the children of the Jedi have been dead the whole time.
That's right. That's
the Ringu thing. Let's just go ahead and rip that Band-Aid off. So
good old new
can
planet.
You give sort of
new planet?
Can you give sort of just like a overview of what the Eye of Palpatine is and what its purpose was?
I will try my best. So they encounter another new super weapon. That's something we haven't seen yet in Legends, right? A super weapon called
the Eye of Palpatine is a cooler name than the Galaxy Gun.
Oh yeah, yeah. And it's a pretty cool idea. So the Eye Palpatine is a asteroid-shaped super dreadnought. It's the author says is bigger than Star Destroyers. It was around for quite some time, I guess is the way to say it, Mike. But what's interesting about it is it's a lot of these super weapons were like basically mini Death Stars and stuff. This, from the way I got it, was more of a mobile battle station, giant dreadnought, more of a war vessel than like a Sun Crusher or a Death Star. Just think of like a mobile, I don't know, base with all kinds of weapons, but it didn't have some sort of super exploder sun thingamajiggy, you know, it didn't have any of that. But it's very large, and its firepower rivaled entire fleets, which, you know. And apparently through orbital bombardment, it could reduce the upper crust of planets to molten slag with its own weaponry. And it exceeded the size of the Superstar Destroyer. So it's bigger than the Executor.
So Papa Palpatine had this thing built to basically track down and destroy a Jedi master who had absconded with a bunch of Jedi children.
Yes.
Who were trying to escape the purge. He's like, oh, well, I'm not going to come after you. I'm going to use a gross misappropriation of Imperial funds and build a super weapon to chase after you out to the outer rim. And to sort of sum things up a little bit, wasn't successful because of the work of a Jedi named Callista.
Right.
Who managed to stop the Eye of Palpatine.
This is kind
of
during the Clone Wars period, correct?
That's right. This was during the Clone Wars. It's kind of laid out. But she stops the Eye of Palpatine from destroying the children. But to do it, she somehow, some reason, has to merge her essence with the main computer of the ship.
To kind
of
override it.
So that's how she's still alive. Yeah. Yeah, after the Clone Wars and everything, she's alive inside the computers of the Eye of Palpatine.
Her consciousness.
And now we've just turned the weirdness up. We've turned the weirdness up to like an 8.5 now.
Yeah. You take the red pill, take the blue pill. Yeah. we're getting all kinds of weird. Also, I'm just going to mention, I guess, while we're here, Mike, because it'll make more sense in the story later. But for some reason, the Eye of Palpatine was just flying around to outer rim systems. And picking up random groups of prisoners and sentient life. And so it ends up being full of like a lot of aliens we can see in Star Wars that don't have talking roles, but they're kind of like, they're not beasts and they're not like fully sentient, like a Hutt or Rodian or something. So things like Jawas, Tusken Raiders.
How dare you, sir? Tusken Raiders, Jawas, and Gamorreans are all sentient. They just don't happen to speak basic.
Oh, I understand that. It's just the way Star Wars kind of presents them in the context of the movies. Poor Jawas.
What's so sad is this book is so weird. I listened to it on Audible last week. I don't remember why all these randos are on the ship.
It picked them up.
But why? I don't remember.
That's a good question.
And it's
it got reactivated.
It's so weird.
Well, it got reactivated 12 years after the Battle of Yavin, which is when this book takes place. And it had to fulfill its programming by picking up all these stormtrooper contingents. And I guess it's going to these planets where there's no more stormtroopers anymore. So it's just picking up random native life and, you know, indigenous creatures and stuff. Because I guess its goal, too, like I said, it is a mobile base. Like it's picking up troops as well. Really bizarre. Like so much weird stuff going on this. Like this is not the essence of Star Wars. This is just like weird sci-fi stuff going on. But it's important, I guess, we go over the I-Palpatine. And you went over Callista, which is very important because we'll come back to her in a minute. So now Han, Luke, and Leia, we're tied up with the Eye of Palpatine and the planet Belsavis, I guess. Have we talked about Belsavis yet, Lang?
Not yet. So basically, once we've gotten our context about the Eye of Palpatine, right, it leaves this nebula and takes off for Belsavis with Luke and I think 3PO on board.
Yeah.
Right?
3PO actually.
Luke, 3PO, and his two students.
It actually captures. Luke gets captured and beat up by some of these indigenous creatures, which were revealed to, in a little while, are Gamorreans mainly and some Tusken Raiders and things like that. And 3PO, actually being semi-heroic, actually follows Luke. He gets on the ship with him, which is pretty interesting. So Luke's by himself in this again?
No, I think he's still got his students
with
him.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, he does still have to have those two students with him.
Well, when I say Luke's by himself, I mean, once again, Luke and the droids are somewhere. Han and Leia are somewhere.
and you're saying that these other two are so inconsequential, he may as well be by himself. And normally I would agree with
red
you, but
shirts.
There's a very
tell us about it.
Extra weird part coming up with that. Well, before we get there, how best to...
I'm scared.
...put this. I'm trying to introduce some of the antagonists here. Right. Like why the ship is going to Belsavis. let me look at their names just to make sure I get them right.
Rogonda.
So we're also given some context of Rogonda Ismarin, who was an Alderaanian,
right,
former Jedi initiate that escaped the Great Purge by essentially being one of Papa Palpatine's concubines and claimed to have a son from him. and that son named Irek, I-R-E-K, is weird is the best way to say this, honestly. He was like force sensitive but sucked at using the force, so his mom had a computer installed into his brain so that he could control droids and computers with the force.
This author has no concept of Star Wars. We haven't got to the force yet stuff, but I guess you've touched on it.
This is why the ship started moving. Yeah. Because this dude was...
Well, and I guess these villains want to use it, right? I mean, that's kind of the simplest motivation of the story. They're the closest thing we have to big bad guys or a Thrawn or something, but they're not that at all. But, I mean, the villain in this book is actually the Eye of Palpatine, which I kind of like, which is cool. It's like a floating planet weapon. Where everything takes place. But yeah, these characters are fairly inconsequential. They do mess with Han and Leia a little bit. So I guess that happens a lot. I don't know. Han's not even himself in this book. It's weird. Like when he meets Luke's student, he's like, "Who's the hot blonde with the legs?" And you're like, Han wouldn't say that. not that way. He would.
Maybe not with her there. Or maybe he would have said that pre-Leia.
Yeah, but at this point he's married to Leia. He's married to Leia, and I don't even think pre-Leia he would say that. He would say that in a different way. If he said something that bad, he would say it in a different way.
Yeah,
he'd be like, "Want to see a starship or something?" You know, I mean, who knows what he'd say?
But essentially, Rogonda and her weird, crappy adult son Irek escaped the death of Palpatine and the collapse of the Empire on Belsavis, and she's like, "We're gonna use your crappy force computer abilities to summon the Eye of Palpatine and use it to unify the Empire."
Yeah, good summer.
Just so happens that Luke and 3PO and his students are on board, and Han and Leia get there at some point, I think.
Yeah, and now I can mention one of the subplots, which is fairly interesting, but it's also kind of weird as well. We mentioned before the Eye of Palpatine and the context of it picking up indigenous creatures and life on planets, because it's supposed to be picking up garrisons of stormtroopers. What picks up Tusken Raiders and Gamorreans, specifically several Gamorrean tribes? And essentially Luke is caught in the middle of a Gamorrean tribe war. It's so strange. Ben, Luke gets beat up pretty bad in this story, Mike. He's pretty weak in this story. He's not the OP Legends Luke, or he's not the reined in, getting wiser Legends Luke we're seeing. He's kind of just a protagonist in this. And I don't know. It's kind of interesting to see Gamorreans, even though they're really not super well explained in this. But it's like the author saw Return of the Jedi and she was like, I want to write about those guys guarding the doors, you know? And she just kind of ran with it. So they're from planet Gamor and all that. So we learned about that. But there's kind of a war going on the ship.
She was like, I don't want to think about, you know, new alien species to put on the ship. True. I just want to take ones that you've already seen and come up with a bad reason for them to be here.
It's true. But some of them are wearing like stormtrooper armor on like parts of their body as like kind of like shoulder pads and stuff. It's pretty cool. It's unique, I suppose, in that way. Stormtroopers they've killed or commandeered weapons.
When you're trapped on a like, you know, planetoids sized ship, you got to entertain yourself somehow.
That's right. So Luke is like dying at this point in the book. There's a point where Luke's kind of like nearly dying. Like something happened to like he's internally bleeding or something. And this is the point where Luke actually speaks with Callista. And I imagine this as Master Chief with Cortana if it was written by like a 4-year-old. That's how I – so like take the Master Chiefs and Cortana stuff from Halo. Picture that and just speed it up dramatically, the relationship, and have no like any sort of credibility to it. And what's really strange, we haven't mentioned about this book yet. This book is incredibly flowery and like literary and prosy. And I'll give you guys context. Like, you know, one of my favorite authors of all time is H.P. Lovecraft. And, you know, prose, I love prose, but this book, the prose is not working for me. I don't know about you, Mike, but it was kind of strange. It was better than first person.
I did Audible this one.
Well, so. You got to hear some of it, I guess, but it was better than the first person Heir to the Jedi atrocity, but it was like kind of boring and dry. I don't know how to say it, but the most important part of this happening in this book now, Luke is basically plugged into the Matrix talking to Callista, kind of. It's weird. It's super weird. And I got to talk about the elephant in the room now, Mike, and I don't even know if you got to this on the audiobook or the audiobook glossed over this, but take the 4-year-old, 5-year-old love story, like I said, written by a 4 or 5-year-old. So Luke and Callista are already in love, even though she's just a disembodied voice. And basically Luke's like, I'm going to get you out of here. I love you. And Luke calls her, I think at one point Luke calls her baby, which Luke would never have done that. So we'll get to that in a second.
I think that
so bad.
Farm boy. Yeah. Luke would have done that because he was so awkward. Not
32-year-old Luke that we have in this book. If my math is right, he's 31 and a half, 32, something like that. Really strange. And then him and Callista, I can't even, this is hard to say. This is like the noodle scooting all over again. But him and Callista, as alluded to strongly by the author, basically proceed to have cyber sex. So I'm gonna take a break, Mike. I'm gonna let you talk now. So I gotta sit back here for a moment. You can tell this is a fantasy author. This is not a Star Wars author. This is her first Star Wars foray.
That's true. And I didn't look up anything else that Barbara had written. I'm not. Again, she's written two Star Wars books.
Better than us. Yeah.
So I can't.
Better than us.
Yeah.
That's.
But I don't even know what happens. I know what happens next, but I still don't know why.
Yeah, I don't fully understand it.
Do you want to try to explain the why, or do you want me to just say what happens?
Nah, you can say what happens, and we can figure out the why together, because the book kind of escalates quickly. The IPOP team essentially starts to finish its mission. Rudely pulls Luke and Calista out of their cyber sex before it can progress. Yeah, it's weird, man. It's weird.
Yeah, basically, Luke's like, I'm going to pull Calista out of the computer. Right. And his student, Cray Mingla, is like, oh, well, I realize that this robot I've been in love with is just a robot that I put, you know, like programs of memories of my boyfriend, Nikos Martin. It's not actually him. So I will switch places, sacrifice myself, kind of, so that Calista can have my body and this will somehow.
They can live together stop. As a robot consciousness or something. The two of them, the two students, kind of. And they'll stop the IPOP scene.
This is where you can tell. This is where you can tell. I listened to this thing on Audible while I was driving for a week. Cause I,
it's probably, like, it was a
Audible kind of glosses over some of the deep details. And I obviously wasn't paying super close attention either. Cause I don't get why this happened. Although
I don't either. Right.
It does fit with what I've been harping on.
Okay.
Luke taking advantage of his younger female students. This one, in a different way, he didn't necessarily have the intention of hooking up with this younger student.
No.
But he ended up putting somebody else's soul in her body so he could have a girlfriend. So he kind of weird scienced this situation and went to a fancy supercomputer and made himself a girlfriend. So good job, Luke. We're going to count this as half of a girlfriend fatality that you've caused in Legends so far. So I think we're at 3.5 in 12 years since the battle.
Are we at 3 now? Or is it 2.5? I don't know.
Oh, man. That's all still too many.
Well, we're going to calculate it up. It might even be 1.5, honestly. But
no, it's at least 2.5.
Yeah, and that's if we're counting Dark Empire 2, which I don't think actually counts.
Which I am, because that's the worst one, so it has to count.
I think Dark Empire 2 is better than this, maybe. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Oh my God, you're right. Because it was crazy in the other direction.
Yeah, it didn't linger too long. It was just like, either
take a bump, we're getting crazy. Crank it up to 11.
Hang on.
And see what happens.
Yeah, this kind of lures you in with a false sense of
we're going to get weird
prose and good writing, and then it goes into like,
we're going to try to slow it down and make it a weird, awkward love thing for Luke and a computer.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And Luke in love with computer. And it's not believable. Luke falling in love with someone's voice this quickly, even if it was guided by the Force in any way. Even if the Force led them together.
Luke was like Fry in that Futurama episode where he falls in love with the fake robot version of Lucy Liu.
Oh my gosh. Basically. Yeah, this is pretty bad. So this is,
I don't know,
this
man.
This is important because here's what's weird though about this is like, I think going forward, they kind of treat Calista just like a regular character. You know what I mean? Like don't remember her origin story. You know what I mean? Like, it's super weird. Just, you know what I mean? She's just a girlfriend of Luke, who's an ancient grandma Clone Wars
God,
Jedi Master.
I just I was gonna go back and reference the antagonists, kind of.
Okay.
Rogonda and Eric, but then I saw a picture of what is coming up. The character he transforms into. I had forgotten how utterly stupid this is.
I mean, arguably the character he transforms into is better, right? Better character. I don't know.
Not this picture I'm looking at. Well. If you want a tease of next week and the week after, go to Wikipedia and look for Lord Nyax. NYAX.
How could I forget him?
Well, I did, because it was that bad until I just happened to see that. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, my goodness.
These books are so bad.
Yeah,
man.
It's rough.
All right, let's try to bring it back.
So Luke has a real girlfriend.
We talked about Luke at the beginning.
Real girlfriend. I think.
Well, he has a real girlfriend that spent 60 years in a computer. Sure.
Yeah. And his senator girlfriend's
there's no
living
way
her life somewhere. It didn't work out for them. Remember? So we got, she's alive.
There's no way this is going to go badly.
No, no way.
So Luke at the beginning, yeah, he's got his Jedi Academy. We're just ignoring the stuff that happened in the previous books. How do the events and characters he encounters impact his development as a hero? I don't know that he's developed as a hero in this book because he's sort of like neutered in his like skill or power level. Yeah. And he makes a computer girlfriend out of one of his students. Not sounding too heroic to me.
I think you nailed it, Mike. There was a part in this book that I enjoyed reading about 50, 60 pages in where Luke kind of recollects Ben Kenobi's lies to him. And he struggles with basically anger and keeping the anger down of the dark side stuff. It's pretty interesting.
And that stuff's
that's
good.
That's good stuff. We touched on some of that in Trusa Bakura. We touched on some of that and also Thrawn and Jedi Academy, but it was a lot more nuanced in those books. But yeah, that stuff's good. But yeah, Luke in the story doesn't really do much. He's just kind of like the eyes we see the story, which is the story about the Eye of Palpatine and this super cool, you know, disembodied girlfriend in the Eye of Palpatine. That's basically this entire book. I mean, that's what they're trying to sell you. They're trying to sell you those two things. Yeah. A super weapon full of Gamorreans and, you know, girlfriend that Luke has to extract out of the Matrix. Yeah, into the real world. I don't know. Insert.
And we always try to look at, does Luke grow in the Force in these books?
Not really.
His growth in the Force was he learned how to do it with a computer on like
in
the
his
Force
mind.
Astral plane.
Yeah, in his mind.
Yeah. So neat, Luke. Good job, I guess. Woof. So other things he learns in this story, I don't know. I have Palpatine bad, Roganda bad, Eric gonna be bad. Mm-hmm. He also probably learns that, my student failed at putting the soul of her boyfriend in a droid because it turns out it was just a droid. So you can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. No C Rook stuff here.
So our third big question, would this story make Luke different than the guy we meet in The Last Jedi? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, I don't know that we've gotten a definitive, amount of time that Luke has been in exile on Octu. But if this was the Luke that was there, you know he would have made a girlfriend out of his X-Wing's nav computer or something.
All well, with all the mods R2's made to it, you know, you never know. Oh, man.
Oh, what was he steering that X-Wing?
Yeah, right.
No, that's bad. Don't resort to that level of humor, Mike.
That's bad.
Wow, this book's not
this
good.
Book is not
and
good.
There's two more in this series.
Luckily, they're all kind of separate, but together. It's kind of a spiritual trilogy, like we mentioned earlier. The first one of its kind so far in the books we're doing. So we'll see where it goes. I definitely distinctly remember some really fun moments of the next two books. Doesn't mean they're good books, but I remember some fun moments. This book didn't even really have any fun moments to me.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a drag. It was kind of a drag.
I know when we do Legends books, Jesse has to carry us, but I legitimately did listen to this on Audible, and I'm still this confused about it, if that gives you any indication of either the abridged quality of the audiobook or, you know, trying to listen to something so blah while you're driving.
Yeah, this reminded me of The Courtship of Princess Leia. If it was a whole lot worse, it might have been written better, but it, you know, all the flaws in The Courtship of Princess Leia were amplified in the story. And, you know, the plot of Courtship of Princess Leia was much better, even though at times contrived and bizarre. This was way worse. This doesn't even seem like it fit in Star Wars. This kind of felt, honestly, Mike, this felt more like Dark Empire 2 and Trusa Bakura than anything else we've read so far. And those are the two furthest things
I'll
away from the movies, it seems like, that we've done.
Yeah, at least Courtship of Princess Leia introduced like a new mm-hmm. group into Star Wars, the Hapes Consortium.
And the,
they're an interesting group. Well, let's not forget
the Dathomir, you know, witches.
And the planet Dathomir. Yeah. This couldn't even come up with a new group of people. They're like, we'll just take all in these space costumes you like from Return of the Jedi and put them on the ship.
We're in space. Yeah. It's rough, but we got through it. And we're going to be following up next week. And I don't know if we said this earlier in the show, guys, but we will be doing these three stories in sequence. So you can kind of get the entire breadth of what people call the Callista trilogy.
Cool. So that's that story.
Moving on.
So we are recording this on the Monday.
Right.
The only way Jesse convinced me to record this on the Monday was he said, after we do the story, we'll do our Patreon
that's
episode.
Right.
So we do have a Patreon account. So if you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/thecanoncantina. We got a few different tiers. We picked up a high roller last week. Thanks again, Rob. If you support us at the $5 tier or higher, you gain access to our second podcast, the Canon Cantina, now called Secret Stash.
That's right.
Where we put our secret stash of premium content. I'm using the word premium loosely, but it's stuff that's not necessarily about Luke Skywalker. Sometimes it's about Star Wars. Sometimes it's not. I'll go ahead and give the tease. I don't know when you're going to put that Secret Stash episode out.
Soon.
But tonight we're going to record
before
our
April
rankings of all... Yeah, we're going to record our rankings of all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies now that we've both seen Captain Marvel. So if you're interested in our thoughts on that, head over to patreon.com/thecanoncantina and help Jesse hitchhike to a celebration. I do want to give a shout out to another one of our patrons who was so mad about something that I said on the show a couple weeks ago that he texted me when I was bashing Game of Thrones and saying I don't want those people involved in Star Wars. He sent me a few texts of how wrong I was. So shout out to you, Eric Taylor.
Nice.
Thanks for listening and being invested enough to let me know how wrong I was.
Yeah, that's a great way. That's a great use of the Patreon, too. You can... we've mentioned this before, but you can help us influence future content. You can also yell at us about stuff and yell at Mike how he's completely wrong about Game of Thrones.
That's right. So before we wrap this up, I wanted to do a quick segment of I Will Make It Canon. something we haven't done since Dark Empire. And God, no, I don't want to take anything from the book we talked about today and change it from Legends to Canon. But in our last episode where we talked about the depiction of Luke Skywalker in the sequel trilogy, you brought up a deleted scene from The Last Jedi that should have been in the film.
Yeah.
I agree with you. The scene of Luke kind of, you know, actually like mourning and having 10 seconds to grieve when he finds out that Han has been killed. I totally agree with you. That should have been in the movie. So this is the deleted scenes edition of I Will Make It Canon. And I think officially, sometimes deleted scenes sort of get loosely considered to be canon.
Sometimes.
But let's kind of talk deleted scenes that we know exist for all of, you know, the saga films. I guess you could go the standalones if you want.
There's a lot of deleted scenes
that you would
in
like
saga
to
films.
See
okay.
made canon. Yeah.
So just off the top of my head, Mike, of course, first one that comes to mind with us being the Luke Skywalker podcast is a pretty great deleted scene at the beginning of Return of the Jedi. Luke finishing building his lightsaber.
Yeah.
What's pretty interesting about this scene is Vader's calling out to Luke at the beginning of the scene saying, "Son, come to me, join me. It's the only way," kind of like he was doing in Empire. And very symbolically, we see Luke not respond. We see Luke actually look down, put the final touches with the Hydra Spanner on his lightsaber, and then turn on the activator switch, and the green blade actually comes on, signifying it's the new color, all that. And then you see R2 and 3PO right there looking at him before they go to Jabba's palace. I don't know if this has to be canon. Clearly it is canon. Luke makes his lightsaber somewhere. You know what I mean? Now the question is does he make it on Tatooine in Ben's hut, kind of like is insinuated in Shadows of the Empire or in this scene, or does he make it prior to this? We don't know. I'll also play devil's advocate here though and say, I'm glad the scene's not in the film because it's kind of a cooler reveal to see Luke first through the hologram and then see Luke come into Jabba's palace just you know, knocking everybody over and Jedi mind tricking Bib Fortuna. And then, of course, most importantly, we don't even know the green lightsaber exists until him and R2 pull one of the coolest parts of any Star Wars movie ever. The stunt they pull together with R2 shooting out Luke's lightsaber and Luke getting it on the sail barge, you know, really far away and doing his little flip. So it's kind of a double edged sword, but that's the first one that comes to my mind. I've got a couple others.
Yeah. So I started thinking in the vein of like those small moments, like, you know, Luke grieving Han. And I thought right to The Force Awakens. There's a deleted scene on Starkiller Base where Kylo Ren finds the Millennium Falcon and goes on board.
I like that scene.
And gets in the cockpit and, you know, has like a moment of, my father's here. I hate that guy. He's not like saying anything. And he's even got the mask on. But you can kind of, you know.
Well, there's some turmoil there,
too. It helps build up the turmoil and tension and the hate that Ben has for Han Solo. I get why it was left out of the movie, because he would have just turned his lightsaber on and destroyed the Falcon's cockpit, and then they would have been stuck on Starkiller Base. So it provided too easy of a way to, you know, keep our heroes trapped there. But I did like the extra, you know, emotional scene between Kylo and one of my favorite characters in Star Wars, the Millennium Falcon.
The Falcon definitely is a character. I've been saying that for years as well, Mike. Man, there's so many scenes. There's so many interesting things. I'm trying to think off the top of my head with Empire. Is there anything in particular in Empire that was removed that was kind of unnecessary? Not the Wampa scene in Empire with the stormtroopers, even though I did enjoy talking about that on our show.
The Wampa attack. Yeah. The Wampa attack on Echo Base is fun, but it shouldn't be canon. I don't think of anything from Empire. The recent, not trailer, like supercut from Topher Grace and the other editor, Star Wars Always, had me thinking. I always did like the deleted scene of Luke and Biggs at the beginning of
That's a pretty
New
big
Hope.
One.
Luke was extra whiny then, but we got some more context on who Biggs is and how he was actually a bit of a hero from the start of the movie.
Yeah, and to back up that scene, it's pretty, I mean, unnecessary scene, and I understand why George took it out with the way he told the story of New Hope, but of course, also referencing Topher Grace's Always YouTube video, the scene of Luke watching the battle between the Devastator and the Tantive in space, watching Leia's ship get pulled into the tractor beam as he's looking through his macro binoculars. But to him, it just looks like two little silhouettes and laser fire. He can't really see what's happening, but he knows it's at least to Luke. He's like, is that a battle? Is that the rebellion versus the Empire? You know what I mean? That's an interesting scene, but of course George took that out because he did not want to introduce Luke until we've been with the droids for a long period of time and introduce Luke in the way he's introduced, through Uncle Owen. But, that's still a pretty cool scene as well, Mike. If you want to just go off of New Hope stuff and, you know, some deleted scenes were added back into the movies, for better, or for worse, especially in New Hope. Speaking of Biggs, not going to bring up Jabba right now, but speaking of Biggs,
thank goodness
George added that scene back in because it actually adds a lot of context to new Star Wars people. We get so invested as fans in Star Wars. We forget where we got information. We forget where we got like extended information. We forget where, like, was that a game? Was that a book? Was that the movie? I don't know. And Biggs is a good example of that. Without the big scene at the beginning and without the big scene where Luke and Biggs meet under his X-Wing before Luke gets in and flies off of Yavin, we only have Luke's interactions with Biggs in the trench and that's it. So it actually adds more context to, oh my gosh, Luke just ran into his friend he was talking about at the beginning of the movie and they're both jumping on their X-Wings and you know, and Luke's like, I told you I'd make it, Biggs. I told you we'd make it here together, you know? He's like, just be like old times, Luke.
They'll never stop us.
And wow, what a great scene that was added back in with the special edition, because just that couple seconds does add a lot of emotional context when, you know, Biggs dies in the trench to Vader.
Yeah. I'll admit that I'm suffering a bit of recency bias here because I'm just because I've seen the deleted scenes from the sequel trilogy more. But I think it would have been cool and helped flesh the character of Maz Kanata out more when she says, "I'm no Jedi, but I know the Force." If they left
that is interesting, scene in
where she, you know, sort of uses the Force to save herself from like the roof or ceiling collapsing on her or whatever. That's kind of a small moment. But another one from The Force Awakens that is very fan servicey but also still fun is Chewie ripping off Unkar Plutt's
arms. Oh yeah.
And we sort of get that later in Solo when we see Chewie rip off the arms of one of the Pike Syndicate guards
finally
on Kessel.
Finally.
But Unkar supposedly tracks down Rey on Takodana and he's like, "Hey, give me my ship." And Chewie's like, "Hey, give me your arms." Rip, and just throws him on a table.
Oh man. That's a pretty good one too. But yeah, like we said, not needed really for the plot because Unkar's story was over. So, and
although that one might be like novel canon, I can't remember if that made it into the novelization or not.
So, pulling back from your memory, Mike, the trilogy that has the most deleted scenes is the prequels, as you know, by a long, a big margin, actually. Any of that you would want? I've got a couple off the top of my head.
So, again, recency bias. It's been a while since I've seen them, and I have a hard time separating deleted scenes from the prequels with bloopers of, like, Ewan McGregor making lightsaber sounds with his mouth and, you know, the goofing off against the blue screen.
Well, you bring up a good point, because the prequels didn't have an hour to 2 hours of content like the sequel trilogies do. They had, like, 20 hours of deleted scenes and behind-the-scenes footage of Rick McCollum cursing into his cell phone and throwing against the wall and stuff. I mean, you get to see all of it. I wish there was more of that.
I mean, if I could add Rick McCollum scenes into Star Wars, sure.
It's pretty grim, man. It's pretty grim. The pods are effed. It's
Rick McCollum is the Mandalorian. Start the rumor now.
So a deleted scene that comes to my mind, which is actually in some of the fan edits of the prequels, which are notorious now because, as Zach said, they reduce some of the cringe, is are his words to say. And a scene I really like that actually doesn't reduce or take anything out, it actually adds, is the scene where Anakin meets Padme's family in Attack of the Clones on Naboo. He gets to meet her dad or mom, see what her family was like, gets to meet her sister, and they're all giving him kind of a hard time. And I don't know if you've ever seen that scene. It's actually well acted.
I'm sure I have. I don't remember.
It's actually a well acted scene, and I'm really shocked they took it out. Because essentially in the film, they go straight to like the lake house retreat, you know, the safe house. But before they go to the lake house retreat, they go see Padme's family. And it just adds more context to the relationship. Because as we know, what happens with Padme and Anakin, a lot of people's complaints is that their relationship happens too quickly, you know. And that's one of the things that really fleshes out, because he meets her entire family and they kind of love him. And Padme's the one saying, "Stop. I don't like him." You know, they're kind of pushing her and, you know, she's pushing back. Yeah. But that's one in Attack of Clones off the top of my head. Another one, which is an interesting deleted scene that everybody always talks about, is the extended Grievous scene at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith when Grievous captures them. You know, he captures Anakin, Palpatine, and Obi-Wan. And to show that's his menace to them, he actually kills... what's her name? She was in the Shaak-Ti. She was in the Marvel comics. Remember on the holograms in the Smuggler's Moon. Mm-hmm. Kills Shaak-Ti right in front of them, just to prove that he means business, basically. And it was only a couple seconds, but they had to cut it out due to some continuity issues because that entire sequence originally was an hour long because Revenge of the Sith was originally 4 hours. So that led to another sequence with them going into the sewers and trying to escape with Palpatine and stuff, and they cut all that out. But that was a good scene.
Yeah, the last one I can think of, and I was like, I know there's one from The Last Jedi that I wanted to put in. And I was trying to think about Luke, and he's got that funny scene where he like tricks Rey into thinking that the island caretakers are going to be wiped out. He's like, "Well, I was going to stop you, but you're running so fast." No, that one doesn't need to be in there. But it's a deleted scene with Finn and Phasma on board Snoke's ship. What's Snoke's ship called? I should know this. I do know this.
Either.
Yeah. anyway, after Finn and Rose have been captured, and after Admiral Haldo has, you know, smashed up Snoke's ship, the hangar's on fire, and Finn's like, "Hey, you stormtroopers, or no, Phasma, tell them how Starkiller Base got destroyed, how we were able to get the X-Wings to attack," trying to expose her as the coward or whatever, and sort of traitor. And some of the stormtroopers start to like question it and lower their guns or whatever. And then Phasma turns around and kills all of them.
I really like that.
The melee fight between Finn and Phasma starts. So I think that scene should have been left in to give depth to both Finn and Phasma, and have an extra connection back to Force Awakens.
Yeah, that scene kind of shocked me, because usually deleted scenes are like whole scenes between scenes that just remove because they're unnecessary. But that was kind of like a whole new tonal take on the entire scene. You know what I mean? Rather than just kind of them going to a cool guy fight.
They felt it was...
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe they felt it was too much crammed into a short amount of time. I don't know. But I really think that moment should have been left in there, because I'm willing to bet large sums of money that Captain Phasma is back
probably in
episode 9. And it would have given us more attachment to her character, or at least more interest. And she keeps trying to cover up how she betrayed the First Order in episode
10. Right. And the ship is called the Supremacy. It took me some time, but it's juggling around.
Damn it, I knew that.
I'm going to say, if anything, you knew that. The Supremacy, the giant B-2 bomber. So that's segment today, guys. We hope you enjoyed it. We will return to I Make It Canon in the future, of course, and we will do a more intense version of this as we go back into the Legends stuff and things we want to keep in Legends. But we're going to build up some more Legends content before we do that again, to reference, especially if you guys have been following the show, so you can actually keep up with us. But of course, that leads us into our iTunes reviews next. If you guys want to help the show out, leave us a Apple Podcast, iTunes review, whatever device you have, or if it's on your computer or on your phone. Unfortunately, if you're an Android user and you don't have an Apple device, you can't really leave us a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. So that's kind of unfortunate. So
take your mom's iPhone and click five stars.
Appreciate that.
Or click one star if you have time to write a really funny.
So here's a five-star review from an individual called Vader Is My Dad. That sounds like Luke.
Okay, so it's one of two individuals. It could also be Leia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking Legends today, and she didn't want to acknowledge him yet. So remember that. I think she's coming to terms with the Vader thing in Legends. It took her a while. Remember that? And Anakin Skywalker appeared to her, and she's like, nope. Here's the review. An audio experience that brings you right into the story. Both podcasters have an almost fanatic knowledge of Star Wars that goes beyond just the movies, and it's very fun to listen to, especially if you are a big Star Wars fan. They leave nothing out of Luke's story and mythos.
Much to my chagrin. There's a lot of stuff like today I wish we could leave out, but thank you so much, Luke or Leia, whoever is using the screen name Vader Is My Dad, for the great review.
Thank you for the great review, and keep leaving us reviews, guys. We'll keep reading them on the show. We're almost caught up to all the reviews we have, so we're about to run out of reviews to read. But if you keep giving us reviews, we'll never stop reading them. So if you want to have your name read on the show, that's a good way to do it. Also, we just really appreciate all that support on that, because on top of the Patreon, like leaving us reviews and following our pages is actually a huge support to us, especially with things like Star Wars Celebration coming up. You have no idea.
That's right. So that'll do it for us here today in the Canon Cantina. Go to thecanoncantina.com for links to all of our social media, and you can listen to the show there as well. And once I update the watch page, you can watch the recordings of these live streams there as well.
That's right.
The Canon Cantina is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, Podcast Addict. It's on YouTube and Twitch, and also on Spotify. That's right.
We don't forget about you Spotify people. We really appreciate you listening there. Help spread the word of our show by subscribing, rating, and reviewing, like I just mentioned. And if you think we do something better, or you have an idea for a future show, email us at canoncantina@gmail.com. Join us next week as we continue this trilogy with Darksaber by Kevin J. Anderson. we're pretty excited to jump into it.
Yeah, that's a word you could use to describe it. Sure. Thanks for joining us here in the Canon Cantina today, everybody. Cheers.
May the force be with you.
Boring conversation anyway.